99 had skin lesions, and 46 of those animals either were dead when they were found or they died shortly after.
An unusual illness in ringed seals on the North Slope. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Thursday, October 13th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, Alaska Native groups bring their message to Congress.
The overriding issue was subsistence. If we are not able to feed ourselves from, you know, the resources from the land, then we're really in trouble.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by the law firm of Landy Bennett Blumstein, attorneys who know the people, businesses, tribes, and communities of Alaska. Landy Bennett Blumstein, online at lbblawyers.com. Wells Fargo, providing Alaskans steps to help reach their financial goals. Wells Fargo Bank, N.A. And by
AT&T, rethink possible. Details at att.com/Alaska or 1-800-252-7266.
A former Alaska state lawmaker caught up in a federal corruption probe has indicated he will change his plea on one count. Former House Speaker Pete Kott today filed notice with the U.S. District Court that he intends to plead guilty to one count of bribery. A message left with Kott's attorney in Seattle, Peter Camille, was not immediately returned to the Associated Press. Kott was convicted of conspiracy, extortion, and bribery in a case stemming from maneuverings around oil tax legislation in 2006. He went to prison for a six-year sentence, but was released when prosecutors acknowledged they hadn't turned over evidence favorable to the defense. He was scheduled to be retried in Fairbanks in December. Dozens of ringed seals on the North Slope have developed a serious illness that's causing severe skin lesions. Many of the seals have died. Other Arctic marine mammals could also be affected, and several agencies are investigating the cause. APRN's Annie Fite reports.
Ringed seals don't usually rest on land in the summer, but in late July, they began hauling out on beaches near Barrow. North Slope Borough wildlife biologist Jason Harriman says the animals had a lot of signs of illness.
Hair loss and really sensitive skin around their face and eyes, and lesions showing up on their flippers and around their tail region.
Harriman says soon after, the North Slope Borough notified NOAA, and both groups have been investigating. Julie Spiegel is a spokesperson for NOAA. She says 107 seals were found near Barrow.
And of those cases, 99 out of 107 had skin lesions. And 46 of those animals either were dead when they were found or they died shortly after.
It's still not clear what's causing the outbreak. Spiegel says there are many things it could be.
NOAA biologists and veterinarians are testing blood and tissue samples from dead and sick animals for bacterial, viral, fungal, or toxic agents, which could be responsible for the animal's condition.
In the next few weeks, the agency will decide whether the mystery should be designated an unusual mortality event. That would free up more resources to study the issue, which could be affecting other Arctic mammals. The North Slope Borough has had reports of a few bearded seals with similar lesions, and the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service is trying to figure out what's causing lesions on walrus. Rosa Meehan is marine mammal chief with the agency in Anchorage.
There's several things that are being looked at, and all we have back is preliminary information that mostly identifies a lot of things that it's not.
Biologists reported about 5% of the 20,000 walrus who hauled out near Point Lay this year had the lesions, but Meehan says it's unclear if the walrus and seal lesions are being caused by the same thing. She says the walrus lesions are much smaller than the ones discovered on seals, and they don't seem to be having a huge effect on the walrus.
It could be minor. We don't know that, but at least we don't have, there's no obvious extensive mortalities.
According to NOAA, the seal illness is the first unusual outbreak of this extent in the Arctic. And Rosa Meehan says it could be related to climate change. She says as animals change their distribution as a result of global warming, they'll be affected by unusual illnesses.
Disease is something that we identify right up front as, boy, there just may be different disease vectors different ways for diseases to be transmitted as the climate changes and as the physical conditions out in the region change.
She says that's why her agency and NOAA are anxious to understand what's causing the outbreak. In the meantime, the North Slope Borough is trying to get the word out to hunters, but biologist Jason Harriman says they aren't telling hunters to avoid eating the seals altogether.
The traditional handling practices have protected communities up here in the past. A lot of times that, you know, the traditional practice is not to consume the seal if they find an abnormality or something that they think is wrong with an animal. And so by allowing people to follow their normal practices, they should be fairly well protected.
Harriman says they don't want to alarm hunters unnecessarily since so little is known about the outbreak. In Anchorage, I'm Annie Feit.
State senators today began looking at a bill that would expand the Denali Kid Care program to include more children. It's basically the same bill the governor vetoed in 2010. The federal government pays for 70% of Denali Kid Care as a health insurance program for children of low-income parents. When it was put in place in 1998, it covered families earning less than double the federal poverty level. That was lowered when Frank Murkowski was governor to the current 175% of the poverty level. The bill would return the coverage level to 200%. The bill's sponsor in the Senate, Anchorage Democrat Betty Davis, says she's looking for ways to make the measure more amenable to the Parnell administration to avoid another veto.
It does not mean that I want to change the focus of my bill, but there might be some things that we want to go along and do some legislation separate from the bill itself. The bill is just flat out to increase from 175% above the poverty level to 200. And that's not asking for very much.
Davis told the Senate Health and Social Services Committee that by limiting the children's health program to families earning lower incomes, Alaska is near the bottom of all states. More than half of states accept families over the 200% level.
A state as wealthy as we are, I see no reason why we should not be able to do that also. So for that reason, this is a priority of mine, to pass this bill so that we might be able to bring on approximately 1,300 children, 300 or less pregnant women.
Last year's veto of the similar bill was based on the governor's belief that by offering medical care to pregnant women, the program was used to pay for abortions. Opposition to the bill was based on that argument. Anchorage Dr. Ilona Farr charged that there is misuse of the program.
Physicians take the Hippocratic Oath, which prevents us from giving a woman abortive remedy, and our tax dollars should not pay for any procedure that kills the future children of Alaska. And that has to do with Medicaid.
However, June Sobosinski of the United Way of in Anchorage told the committee that 100% of the agencies her organization works with had volunteered to lobby to get the bill passed. She encouraged legislators and the administration to work through the abortion issue to allow the bill to be enacted.
Let us engage this question of abortion, but apart from this bill, which is about the health of children we already have. Let us find the appropriate context in which to grapple with that question. And let us hold harmless these 1,300 children and these up to 300 pregnant women.
Elizabeth Ripley, executive director of the Matsu Health Foundation based in Wasilla, also supports the program. Ripley says Alaska has seen a 30% decrease in the number of children covered by private insurance during the past decade. She says making the program available to more children would improve the general health level of Alaskans. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a Juneau woman takes home a victory in a 500-mile bike race.
My goal was just to finish, so I was completely shocked to win the race.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
Crowley, providing tanker escorts, fuel delivery, and energy support services to Alaskans for over 50 years. From Valdez to the North Slope, Crowley knows Alaska. Crowley.com.
The Army is investigating the death of a Fort Wainwright-based soldier, trying to determine if it was murder or suicide. 1st Stryker Brigade Private Danny Chen of New York City was found dead in Afghanistan October 3rd. U.S. Army Criminal Investigation Command spokesman Christopher Gray says the 19-year-old Chen's body was discovered at a forward operating base where he was stationed in Kandahar province.
Private Chen was found deceased in a guard tower with a gunshot wound to the head. We're not releasing any further details concerning the investigation at this point to protect the integrity of the case.
Gray says the Army investigates all deaths as if they were homicides.
That's not to say that this was a homicide, but we want to make sure that we get all the evidence, all the witness statements, all the pertinent information to make an informed decision as to the cause and manner of death.
Private Chen's parents told NBC News in New York they don't believe their son took his own life. They say he was happy, but that the Army also informed them he had been racially taunted by fellow soldiers and once beaten by a group of 6 superior officers. The Army's Gray would not comment on any harassment or abuse Private Chen and a Chinese American may have suffered.
It would be premature at this point in the investigation to discuss any type of allegations without us doing a complete investigation.
Gray says the investigation is looking at both how Chen died and the circumstances leading up to his death. He could not say how long the inquiry will take. Private Chen joined the Army last January and arrived at Fort Wainwright in May. He deployed to Afghanistan in August as a replacement in the 1st Stryker Brigade combat team. Chen's funeral was held today in New York. As the federal budget is scrutinized for savings, there's a mad scramble going on in Washington to protect programs from drastic cuts. This week, Alaska Native leaders joined with the National Congress of American Indians to speak up for the Indian budget and tell Congress and the White House about their other priorities. But they couldn't entirely escape the recent congressional scrutiny on Alaska Native corporations. APRN's Libby Casey reports.
The National Congress of American Indians is focusing its sights on 3 issues: protecting funding for Native programs, restoring the Interior Secretary's authority to take land into trust for all federally recognized tribes, and protecting Native women. Edward Thomas of Juneau is president of the Tlingit Haida Central Council and says speaking with a unified voice rings more powerfully.
I think that if you look at 550 tribes, they're going to find that everybody has different priorities. And so it's important that we don't come back here and give Congress mixed messages on really what our priorities are.
This week, Thomas and other Alaska Native leaders met with members of Congress and their staffs to give their input and gauge how tough some of the upcoming fights will be. Thomas says the congressional delegations of Alaska and Hawaii didn't paint a doom and gloom picture.
I have not heard the these are tough times message from the people that we've spoken to. Their message to us is that we're going to do our best to try to hold our own because of the government-to-government relationship that federal government has with tribes. And so those are the messages we're hearing, and we're encouraged by it. But you know as well as I do, they're a small voice compared to the rest of the Congress. And so we really need to work with them to educate Congress on our issues.
It wasn't just tribal leaders who came to Washington. So did representatives of Alaska Native corporations, like Rosita Worrell, vice chair of Sea Alaska in Southeast. She was part of a meeting this week with President Obama's senior policy advisor for Native American Affairs, Kim Teehee. Worrell says the White House meeting with the Alaska Federation of Natives focused on what happens when money is tight and the need for hunting and fishing is strong.
The overriding issue was subsistence. Subsistence hunting and fishing and the protection and the rights of our people to be able to sustain themselves, to maintain their spiritual relationship with the land and the environment. We said, yes, we know, that we're facing budget cuts, but if we are not able to be able to feed ourselves from, the resources from the land, then we're really in trouble. It was a very powerful meeting that we had.
The reputation of Alaska Native corporations has been under fire in Washington as members of Congress call for hearings investigating last week's arrest of a subsidiary employee in a major bribery and corruption scheme. A former executive of EAC Tech, part of the EAC Corporation of Alaska, was busted with Army Corps of Engineer employees for padding federal contracting invoices to the tune of $20 million. The head of EAC Corporation is Rod Worrell, who has not talked to the media. Rosita Worrell is his mother.
I know he is constrained, as well as his board members. They're constrained, you know, by what they can say. I know that they would love to tell the whole story, but right now, you know, I know that their legal counsel is telling them what they can say and what they can't say.
Worrell calls the corporation a victim. She says the EAC Tech scandal has not overshadowed this week's meetings and messages or tainted the corporation mantle. Albert Kukesh agrees with Worrell. The Democratic state senator is on C-Alaska's board of directors and says he feels no association with the EAC Tech arrest.
See, the problem here is that there were no natives that were included in that fallout. There were no natives indicted. These were non-native people. And then we get the blame for it. They paint us with the same brush. If three members of the Native EAC family had got arrested because they had done something wrong, maybe I would have felt really bad about it.
But even as the corporate leaders join with tribal leaders to plead the case of Alaska Native priorities, from subsistence to funding for Indian programs, the Alaska Native corporations are under scrutiny. When asked if he was meeting with some of the critics of ANCs to counter their message, Kukesh said he didn't have the chance. And the congressional attention on EAC Tech continues. On Thursday, Massachusetts Congressman Ed Markey asked the Department of Homeland Security to hand over documents and emails about how business went down at EAC Tech. In a statement, Markey said Alaska Native corporations should be representing their people, but that there are real questions about whether this particular company did that. In Washington, I'm Libby Casey.
The search continues for a Fairbanks man missing northeast of the city. Gerald DeBerry was last seen Monday riding a four-wheeler in the Frozen Foot Creek area near mile 70 of the Steese Highway. DeBerry was a volunteer member of a search team looking for a Utah woman who was found safe Monday morning. Alaska State Trooper spokeswoman Megan Peters says the 53-year-old DeBerry has good knowledge of the area, but reports from fellow searchers who talked to him on the trail indicate possible trouble.
We do know that when he was last seen, he was starting to be hypothermic, and we also know that he has personal medical issues. And unfortunately, that does not make it look good.
Peter says one of the fellow searchers gave DeBerry a jacket to wear over his sweatshirt, but that he does not have gear or provisions to be out for an extended period. She did not know if he has any communications equipment. She says the search for DeBerry has been extensive, employing ground crews, search dogs, state, military, and civilian aircraft, but that they've scaled back to aerial efforts today.
We really don't know if we're looking in the right place, so we're trying to see if we can lay eyes on him from above.
Peter says they're hoping to find some sign of DeBerry to narrow the search area and focus a ground crew on.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by First National Bank Alaska, branches in 18 communities around the state and on the web at fnbalaska.com, member FDIC, equal housing lender. The Pebble Partnership, developing a comprehensive mine plan that meets Alaska's regulatory requirements while supporting sustainable fisheries in Southwest Alaska. PebblePartnership.com. And by Solstice Advertising, bringing creativity to Alaska businesses and nonprofits, from research and strategy to print, web, and broadcast production. Solstice Advertising, an agency for brands that want to shine.
A Juneau woman making her debut in an ultra-marathon cycling event won what's called the Great American Bike Race last weekend in Southern California. Dr. Janice Schufelt finished the Furnace Creek 508 in 35 hours and 14 minutes. That's more than 500 miles in less than a day and a half. She was the top female finisher and ninth overall out of 70 solo starters. KTOO's Casey Kelly has more.
Janice Schufelt had no idea she could win an ultra-cycling event. After years of competing in short bike races, she just started long-distance training in the last year.
I figured, well, I'm doing all this training, would be a good year to do an ultra. ultra meaning extra long distance bike race.
She found the Furnace Creek 508 on the internet. Despite its name, the course is actually 509 miles. It starts just outside Los Angeles and stretches through Death Valley and the Mojave Desert before curving back to the finish line near Joshua Tree National Park. It crosses 10 mountain passes and has a total elevation gain of over 35,000 feet. To prepare, Shufelt biked around Juneau a lot.
To the end of the road and then up Eagle Crest, out Fame, out North Douglas, then to the end of the road and back.
By the end of the summer, she figured she'd been up to Eagle Crest 56 times this year. She also did a couple 24-hour rides in Washington, where the roads aren't as hard to come by and the weather isn't so wet.
I did one 16-hour overnight training ride in Juneau, but the second 8 hours, it just poured rain the whole time. This was in July. And that was just miserable.
Instead of a bib number, contestants in the Furnace Creek race pick a totem or animal to represent them. As they go through each checkpoint, riders shout out their animal's name, and that's how race officials keep track of everyone. Shufelt, who is half Tlingit, chose Wushkitan as her animal.
Of course, no one knew what Wushkitan was, but by the end of the race, everyone was just calling me the Alaska Shark.
Shufelt had no idea she was doing well in the race until the second-to-last checkpoint. That's when her support team, which consisted of husband Jim, daughter Megan, and friend Peter Apathy from Sitka, told her she was in second place in the women's field and 10th overall.
And I was like, oh, come on. Really?
Really. And at the last checkpoint, Shufelt's team found out she was only 15 minutes behind leader Shauna Hogan, a well-known ultra-cyclist and six-time winner of the Race Across America.
They didn't tell me that because they wanted me to just keep riding my own race and not change anything.
Going up a hill during that last leg, Shufelt caught a glimpse of a rider she didn't recognize.
It turns out it was her, and she was stopped momentarily, and her crew was tightening some bolts on her bike or something. And I rode by her, and she did a big double take and yelled something at her crew, and then I knew the race was on.
Hogan would give chase, but finished 12 minutes behind Shufelt, who was the only solo female racer who had never competed in the Furnace Creek 508 before.
My goal was just to finish, so I was completely shocked to win the race.
Beating out world-class competition in her first ultramarathon hasn't gone to Shufelt's head. The win qualifies her for the Race Across America, but
I definitely know I am not doing that, because that takes minimum of 9 days, and that's a bit much.
The 45-year-old, who's administrator of the Southeast Alaska Regional Health Consortium's Ethel Lund Medical Center, says she may do another race similar to Furnace Creek, though, including the Fireweed 400 in South Central Alaska. In Juneau, I'm Casey Kelly.
The season of snow and ice in Fairbanks has people thinking about skiing and dog mushing. But one Fairbanks resident is quietly pursuing a winter sport that doesn't get much attention in Alaska. As KUAC's Dan Bross reports, elite speed skater Liam Ortega has been training in Fairbanks despite living thousands of miles from an official venue.
On a late fall morning, Liam Ortega does short sprints around the University of Alaska Fairbanks hockey rink. The small and lean 26-year-old demonstrates just how fast he can ramp it up to over 30 miles an hour, but says he's cautious about skating like he would on a real 400-meter ice oval.
I could definitely get my speed up in such short distance, but I don't do like intervals at high speeds to like deep fatigue, just to like reduce the chance of a crash, because crashing without pads into boards doesn't feel good.
Crashing is something Ortega knows all about. In 2008, while training on the Olympic Oval in Salt Lake City, he was bowled over by another skater, suffering a fractured skull and brain injury. He recovered and returned to racing, this time with a helmet, but it was too late to make the 2010 Olympics.
The Olympic year was really tough for me because that's when I just kind of threw all my cards in. I trained harder than I ever have, but I just didn't have the base to meet that training. So, like, I was burnt out. I was just completely fried. I mean, the Olympic trials came and went, and I didn't know if I wanted to keep skating. Like, after the trials, I just took a month off and went skiing with my dog, and I did not look at my skates.
It took some time, but Ortega decided to rededicate himself to speed skating and has returned to top form, placing high in some big U.S. races last season.
I won the 1500 America's Cup Series, and then I was fifth at the U.S. Championships in the 5K and seventh overall in the all-around.
That means a lot because the United States is home to some of the best speed skaters. Ortega grew up a long way from their world, playing hockey and cross-country skiing in Fairbanks, only trying speed skating 10 years ago through a now-defunct local club. He went on to college in Milwaukee, where there's a speed skating oval. He's trained in Salt Lake City in recent years, but left the intense atmosphere of the Olympic town last spring to return home to Fairbanks, where he says training is more enjoyable and diverse.
Being back home, I trained with all my skier friends and my hockey friends, and those guys are tough.
Ortega also practices on inline roller skates, sometimes behind a motorcycle, achieving ice-like speeds on pavement. Ortega credits a new approach to training that puts equal emphasis on hard workouts and recovery, with taking him to a new level.
I have no doubt that I'll race well this year. I'm definitely the strongest I've ever been, and I'm able to hit speeds that I've never have.
When he's not busy getting faster, Ortega's using some of his time in Fairbanks to run an after-school program and develop a nonprofit organization called Driven to Move, aimed at getting Alaskans more active. He's also trying to generate financial support to pursue his goal of competing in the 2014 Olympics.
I'm trying to find like a title sponsor for myself and just like bring the Olympic movement back to Alaska. Being able to fully focus on skating for the next 2 years would put me in a place to make the Olympic team and, I don't know, potentially have a cherry on top with the podium.
Ortega says this is a building year in which he hopes to lower his race times and possibly qualify for some World Cup events. His first competition of the season is the U.S. National Championships in Milwaukee in mid-December. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. You can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Dan Bross in Fairbanks and Casey Kelly in Juneau. APRN's Libby Casey reported from Washington, D.C., and Dave Donaldson from Juneau. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Condor Airlines, with connecting flights from Barrow, Bethel, Juneau, Kodiak, Nome, and Prudhoe Bay to Anchorage on Alaska Airlines, and continuing nonstop service to Frankfurt. Details at condor.com. Quitting tobacco is the best thing you can do for your health. Join a free program that will help you create an easy-to-follow plan to quit. It will show you how to get ready, take action, and then live the rest of your life as a non-smoker. Alaska's Tobacco Quit Line provides 8 weeks of patches, gum, or lozenges, and quit coaches that are trained to address Alaskans, including expectant mothers. There's more information at 1-800-QUIT-NOW or visit alaskaquitline.com. This message sponsored by Alaska's Tobacco Quit Line. It's free, it's confidential, and it works. The Federal Aviation Administration sets standards for the operation of aircraft in airports and provides services to the flying public. Passengers are influential in making flying safer in Alaska, so when passengers know their rights and responsibilities, aviation is safer for everyone. There's more information online at faa.gov/go/flyalaska or toll-free at 1-866-357-4704. This message sponsored by the FAA.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.